business coaches will say, niche down, and you'll make so much money. As if like we were to say, oh, I help busy women. And all the busy women are like, oh my God, sign me up, whatever price, because I'm a busy woman. Nobody really thinks that way.
Your earning potential is gonna be so much higher if you wait until you have the skills and the experiences, because I think a lot of people might get into it too early.
Stop asking yourself, who do I help? Start asking yourself, what problem do I solve? And there's where you get a high ticket offer.
You can scale to $1 million easily with like one channel, one funnel, one sales process, and one offer. But most people think they need like 8 of those things in order to scale.
A lot of people, they get stuck there where they're like, they don't believe in themselves. And my advice to that is borrow the belief from somebody else until you believe it.
Genetic fat loss program. All you do is you send in the genetic test, they take it, you get the results, you upload that into ChatGPT, and it analyzes these genetic results across millions of data points. It gives you like a personalized approach based on your genes.
Yo, what's up, everyone? Tyler Bosetti here, host of the All for Nothing podcast show. And I had a blast hosting these two individuals. And just to share a little bit of context before we dive into the show, I think it's very impressive that they are a married couple doing business together. They are business partners. And I tell you what, if you're an entrepreneur, you already know how hard it is to operate a business, let alone a successful and profitable business. And doing that with a spouse is very impressive. So shout out to Aaron and Jordan, the guests on today's show. And fun fact about them, they've been on a reality TV show, and they have quite a lot of wisdom to share outside of their fitness business, right? So essentially what they do is they coach people online through helping them start and scale their fitness businesses. Humble beginnings, lower to middle class family, and trial and error, just getting out of a 9-to-5 job. Jordan is a former opioid addict, and he turned his passion for fitness into an 8-figure business. And he did that by being inspired by Aaron, his wife, where she left a 9-to-5 job and was absolutely crushing it, obviously still is, and being one of the first to really kind of push online fitness and online coaching. But a lot of what they share in the show, outside of just day-to-day personal development, being optimized, being newer parents, they just had a kid in the last year, so that's very cool. And again, still very, very impressive when it comes to building and scaling a business and getting results for their clients, where they help them, again, start and scale online fitness businesses to 6 figures, 7 figures, 8 figures. They host events. But yeah, it's just really cool to bring on people that are, you know, in the trenches and doing very well and actually, you know, share valuable, applicable things, not necessarily just in business or making a bunch of money, you know, just principles and the good, the bad, the ugly, and the reality of things. So excited to have Aaron and Jordan. Let's dive into the show. Aaron and Jordan,
what's up? Welcome.
Hey, hey, thanks for having us.
Before we dive in, like, the business stuff about all the cool things that you guys have done, the ups, the downs, scaling to 7 figures, scaling to 8 figures, helping people get started in their businesses and completely change their life, I'm curious on, how did you guys meet each other? What's the story in the background, how you guys met? It's a good story.
Yeah.
Aaron's version is way better than mine.
Jordan didn't want to accept my version for the longest time because he was embarrassed about it. And then one day someone asked us and he's like, you should tell him the real story. I'm like, oh, I can actually tell him the real story now. So we met originally through Tinder. We both swiped right. And we had mutual friends. We like knew of each other. And I was like, oh, this guy's kind of cute. And then we like had 2 exchanges back and forth. Nothing really happened because nothing came of it. A couple months later, my sister, who is 7 years younger than me, you're gonna have to stop jumping off.
I just said
anxiety.
I just had to like restart the camera and shut off. Sorry.
My sister, who is 7 years younger than me, she swipes right on the same guy. And they started chatting and stuff. I started like casually dating somebody else, and my sister was showing me like their text exchanges, and she's like, this guy's weird. She's like, look at this. And it's so typical Jordan, just paragraphs and paragraphs of over explaining things. And, you know, like this is the first time talking to her, and he's just going in. And I'm like, you know what? I respect that. I'm like, I'm older than you, and I'm like looking for a partner, cut to the chase. I think that's cool. She's like, I think it's weird. And so nothing ever came of like the two of them or anything. And then a few months later, I stopped dating the guy that I was dating. He and I started talking again. We had a doggy date, and we each had a pit bull. Pit bulls fell in love, and pretty much the rest was history.
Yeah, and you know, I was
I guess you can probably tell from the story, I was a little bit of a, I guess you call it a fuck boy nowadays, right? I was just kind of like not really wanting any stable relationship or anything like that. And so when I heard that she was getting a divorce, like, oh, well, that's perfect because she's probably not going to want to get married anytime soon. So, you know, we kind of entered through that lens. And then I was the one who eventually was like, ah, oh, fuck, like, I'm pretty in love here. I think we should get married.
Yeah, so you went on the Rover app and you babysat somebody else's pit bull. You knew she had
I mean, that might be a great strategy, honestly. The only reason he got a first date is because he had that dog.
Yeah. Our dog's hitting off, so she was like, she had no choice.
Yeah, I was like, what do I do now? My dog loves this dog.
What was the process like of going through the divorce to getting married, building the business together? I'm curious on how that all, you know, kind of... Because I'm sure people like... negative limited beliefs and other people's opinion. What are people going to think about me about going from this marriage to a serious relationship and eventually work on her and building the business?
It's interesting because she doesn't, I've never been anyone who literally like gives the least amount of fucks what people think than Aaron. But anyways, I'll let her tell her side of it.
Still, it still makes it hard though, right? It's a really good question. Well, my previous husband and I, we also owned a business together. And it went terribly wrong. Like, we had a really messy divorce, personal divorce and business divorce. We were in court for 19 months fighting over assets, couldn't agree on anything. So, you know, like if there's a Venn diagram of like toxic relationship history, toxic business history, like I was smack dab in the middle of I should never get married again. Or I should never start a business. I'll never have a business partner again. Like, that was my firm, firm stance. And so Jordan and I, like our first date, the doggy date, we're sitting out back of my house. And that's pretty much what we were talking about how we just think marriage is a stupid institution. And we're really on the same page about it. I was in the middle of that 19-month process. And I wasn't trying to impress him. I was just venting about the whole thing. And I have court on Monday and I have to do this and that. And I was just like, I come with all this baggage. Isn't it so appealing? And Jordan was like, yeah, I think it's all kind of bullshit. My mom has been married and divorced a couple of times. And so we were just kind of chatting through that. And then eventually, I think the business partnership became a lot more obvious even before marriage did. Actually, the first thing Jordan and I did together in a business fashion was our podcast. We started just saying, you know, this will be a fun project. There's no revenue attached to it. We never had any like ambition to make money from the podcast. We're like, it'll just be fun. You know, we'll just do this together. And as much as I did not want to start a business with my husband because of all those reasons, I was like, I really can't deny that we are really great business partners. You know, we just have really great opposing skill sets. And it became so obvious that it's like, it would be kind of dumb to not try to do this. So then from the podcast, we were smart enough to not just combine our businesses together. So I had a fitness business. He had a fitness business. And we just worked on them side by side in the same household and didn't even like share tips or ideas a lot of the time. It was just like, you have your thing, I have my thing. And so we said, you know, it feels risky to merge this together, but let's start a new offer together from there. So from there is where we started T4E Systems, which was we would do launches. We would do those quarterly.
Yeah, like twice a year. Yeah, at the time, it was called Transform Together. And the whole marketing angle was like join as a couple, right? Which is interesting because when we launched it, it went really well. We did 6 figures in our first month, like launching that offer together. We're like, well, this seems to work pretty well. But it was funny because the whole marketing position was like, hey, you and your husband, you know, you guys sign up together. It was basically like 100 out of 110 clients. It was like 95 women and literally like 6 husbands.
Dragging the husbands.
Dragging them by their feet. Results. Yeah. Then they quit like three weeks in. So they're like, well, I guess that didn't
really. Yeah, that's not a great business model.
Yeah. But it was funny, Tyler, because when we met, I was like working a full-time job as a outside sales rep for an industrial company and was like doing really well, sales gig, right? Like making good commission. Hated it. And eventually I wanted to get into online health and fitness. I wanted to start that business. So I did. I quit my job. So I went from making like 10, 15K a month down to like 2,000 a month. And so Aaron's like, listen, you know, I'll support us while you're getting your business ramped up. You're going to live here. And I was kind of just freeloading. And it was funny because one day I was, it was like a random Tuesday and I'm taking a nap. And this is maybe a month and a half after I quit my job. And she wakes me up and she's like, hey, I don't know if you've seen this, but my business is kind of declining. I'm paying all the bills. Like, you don't seem very stressed, motherfucker. You're like, what's going on? You're napping on a Tuesday. And Tyler, I have not taken a nap since. Not like that just like lit a fire. You know,
I'm
like,
scarred him.
Yeah, I'm like, damn, you're right. Like, I'm being a piece of shit. So it's basically just like hockey stick from there.
Can, like, I'm curious on that point. You guys both had like traditional 9-to-5 jobs, which I think that somebody having a 9-to-5 job can be extremely beneficial. That we all know here that entrepreneurship and having a business is definitely not for everyone. And I think my job is a lot of value. And in modern times, I think one of the biggest opportunities for, I put in air quotes, like everyday people that are interested in doing more outside of their job, 9-to-5, like there's so many different avenues, especially through online, right? Through social media, putting content out there, having side hustles to where you can have your 9-to-5 and you can have a couple of side hustles and make extra income, or just have passion and create relationships and just so many other cool things outside of saying, hey, screw my 9-to-5. I want to be like everyone else on the internet, and entrepreneurship is so cool and it's perfect. In reality, most people are not cut out for it. You know, they can pursue those other passions as like a side hustle. But I'm curious, when you guys were launching that new offer, just your experiences in general, helping tons and tons of clients, which your T4 Systems, if I'm not mistaken, you guys help business owners that are in the health and wellness space with arguably the number one problem any business would have, which is generating qualified leads. But outside of the qualified leads and business in general, you guys, again, going from literally 9-to-5 jobs to maybe a couple thousand a month to, you know, 7-8 figures now. Like, what are you seeing to be the most consistent problem or common mistake that entrepreneurs make in general? And then the common mistake that entrepreneurs make going from 6 figures to 7 figures and 7 figures to 8 figures.
Yeah. Maybe Aaron, if you want to start with that, but I want to say one thing to your point. You're so right, man. Working a 9-to-5 job, like if I had to give somebody advice who maybe was like 15, 16, 17, about, listen, your whole 20s, if I were you, I would just get paid to learn and literally work inside of an industry, work a few different careers and like get paid to learn in your 20s. Then use what you learn to earn in your 30s. And then in your 40s, you can literally earn what you just earned on the money you just made, right? Like you really, like your earning potential is going to be so much higher if you wait until you have the skills and the experiences. Because I think a lot of people might get into it too early. If you want to jump
in. Yeah. The question was 6 to 7 figures, biggest problems? Or
yeah, just like what are like the common mistakes that you guys see? And I'll preface this a little bit more in terms of like after coaching, you know, thousands of people online through different coaching offers on my end, like I have a more emphasis on financial literacy. To what you said, Jordan, right? Like, how do you make it? How do you keep it? And how do you grow it, right? Most people are like, how do I go buy that first real estate property, Tyler? How do I invest into crypto? How do I get into algorithm trading bots? How do I go invest this money? It's like, yo, you're overlooking tax loopholes potentially.
Yeah.
Can't really grow if you're not keeping it. Or it doesn't matter how much you make unless you're keeping as much as possible. Or you're not making enough.
You're not making enough to invest, right?
Exactly. So for me, it's kind of getting people to understand that, okay, they're either in one of these three buckets and or we need to be doing all the above to where maybe they are making multiple 6 figures or 7 figures, 8 figures. And it's kind of keeping all wheels oiled, right? And machine going. So I would say that on my end, the most common mistake I've seen is just financial literacy, what they don't teach us in school around credit, how to get capital, and then how to deploy that and keep that capital. But for you guys, though, what have you seen to be like, man, just tweaking this one thing or a couple of things literally helps people explode from $0 to 6 figures, 7, 8 figures.
Yeah. That's a big one. There's another big one, but that one. So we have like 3 separate programs. We have our IFC Accelerator, beginners, but also like fixing initial problems. Then we have our legacy people. And those are the people who are around like oftentimes $8,000 to $20,000 a month, like kind of this range that we're talking about. All right. They've gotten over the hump. I have a little bit of money now. They're asking questions like, can I invest this? What should I do? That's a big one because oftentimes see it where they're like, I had a $30,000 a month. That means I made $30,000. Like, no, it doesn't. There's like, there's a lot more things to consider here. And then we look at their P&L and it's like, how are you broke? What are you doing? How are you thinking about investing this? So really understanding how to look at a P&L as a business owner, like what is your budget for marketing? What is your budget for overhead? What is your budget for labor? And if you're overpaying on labor, you're not going to have budget for marketing, things like that. Like really understand how to make data-based decisions is a big one. And then the other one I would say is leadership, because if you want to grow, you can't do it alone. And so if you have this crazy, wild vision, none of it matters if you can't get people behind it and you can't get people to fit their vision inside of your vision. And you can't communicate in a way that makes people feel valued, appreciated, excited. So I think oftentimes we like, I see so many coaches, they wear their coach hat and they do it really well and they're great and they serve their clients really well. But then they're like, my team members are annoying. I have to babysit them. I'm like, what do you mean you have to babysit them? Like, these are your most valuable clients. Like these, you know, this one assistant coach, they protect $100,000 a year in revenue in your business. Like, treat them as if they're paying you $100,000 and mentor them appropriately. But the problem is a lot of business owners, they just don't quite have those leadership skills yet. And if you're a business owner listening to this, or if this resonates, a couple of my favorite leadership books ever are of Patrick Lencioni's. He has some of the best stuff on leadership.
Not the grandfather of them all, Maxwell.
Maxwell. He's got some good ones.
Yeah.
Lencioni's, but his books are interesting because they're like fables. They're a little less dense. They're easy to read. They're fun to read too. It's like these little mini stories about leadership principles.
Get you off real quick, Jordan, because I'm curious. One thing you had mentioned is data-based decisions, Aaron, and it doesn't have to be down to like the exact percent or penny, right? But like, what's a good idea in terms of a budget to follow, right? Like on the personal side, you hear the traditional like 50, 30, 20, 50% towards everyday costs, like, you know, housing, car, transportation, utilities, 30% towards like entertainment, miscellaneous things, and 20% towards savings or debts. Now, again, that's a very, like, very high level, 50, 30, 20. But what would you say in business is like a good rough outline for people to follow? Because everyone's business is different. I'm very aware of that, right? Whether they're selling smoothies or whether they're doing info product stuff online, people's profit margin and targets are going to be potentially much different. But what's like a good parameter to follow?
Yeah. Do you want to break it down?
Yeah. I think, like you said, depending on the business model that you want to create, like how much you want to scale. So let's use an example of, I want to grow a business that is built, is like budgeted to scale, to grow. Because that looks very different than if I'm going to create a very low overhead business where I'm the main delivery, like I'm doing all the coaching, like your margins are going to be a lot higher. So for example, let's say you want to grow a $50,000, $100,000 a month business. What we look for is ideally 50% minimum net operating income, right? So net operating income is essentially just the expenses you need to run that business. And there are kind of three categories there. You have labor, you have marketing, you have overhead. So with—
And just to clarify, we're talking about an online service-based business. It's like an online fitness coach, which, gosh, they're so lucky. You know, like you mentioned, like a smoothie business, things like that. There is no product or cost of goods in a business like that.
Yeah, exactly. So like your cost of goods, like we always say, you got to make sure your gross margins are on point, because just like in fitness, you can't out-train, you know, a bad diet. You can't outgrow a bad gross margin. So like, you know, if with a product-based business, you have revenue minus cost of goods sold. But with us, it's really labor is more of your cost of goods sold, right? So like you need to make sure you're maintaining that fixed gross margin of 80, 85%, 90% is amazing. Anything below 75%, you're going to kind of screw yourself because you're not going to scale. So let's say you have, you know, 25% going towards labor. Let's say you have another 10% going towards marketing, another 5% going towards overhead. You know, with overhead in our business, there's not much. Subscriptions, apps, processing fees. So again, just to recap, like if you can be at 50% net operating, then everything you talked about is underneath that, right? Your write-offs, like reinvesting back in the business, mentorship, professional development. And at the end of the year after taxes, you know, you should be putting away saving 20, 25% in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah, that's very helpful. And then obviously you guys would take it a little bit step further, obviously, depending on the person and what they're trying to do and their goals, et cetera. But if you see that their labor is like 30% and their marketing of that 50% NOI, if it's like 40, 50%, it's just a consistent measure of those three wheels to say like, well, you haven't got any current client referrals, may need to, you know, bring down your ad spend this month and try to just go get testimonials and ask for some names and numbers to contact for.
Yeah. Usually their problem is a little different. Usually what we find is they start making some money organically. They have some cash they put away. And, you know, they start getting distracted. They're like, oh, I have this cash in my bank account. What should I invest it in? I'm like, well, let's talk through your business a little bit. Is your business growing? No.
Get some trend. Shoot up some trend.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And you know, it's like, well, you've got that cash over there, right? Like you could use that to grow your business. And they're like, huh? And it's like, you know, that's a tool. Like you could invest that cash into advertising and to reach all those things, where it'd be kind of like you're trying to build a like a workshop with your hands. And you're like, oh, what kind of tool should I use? And you're like, well, there's a freaking hammer over there. Like you could use the hammer, but they're always thinking like, no, I need something different. It's like, you need to deploy the cash. If you want to scale a business, deploy the cash to grow your business. And not many people understand that concept.
Well, a lot of people also get really spoiled. They're like, well, I haven't had to do that yet. I just have only posted on Instagram and that's free. It's like, yeah, that works to an extent. And then you tap out all the warm people who are already there. Unless your following isn't growing, you have to find a way to make it grow. Advertising makes it grow. You get more leads that way.
Yeah, I feel like 99%, if not 100% of businesses is to solve health and or solve wealth, right? And they go one and the same. But the online fitness coaching space has been quite unique to see evolve over the years to one, like not even really existing to, you know, 10 years ago, it was like the new hot thing. And I just remember seeing Lane Norton just talking shit to people on Twitter.
Yeah.
Used to what it is now. It's like trainers were like, yo, I'm not going to train people one-on-one in person. I can have 30 times more clients and have significantly more time back and more profit. But I'm curious to understand how you guys were able to make massive breakthroughs from being essentially early adopters in the fitness industry and the online fitness industry to being elite, right? Being elite in terms of seven figures, eight figures. And like, what's next? What's on the horizon, right? Outside of doing the typical before and after photos, do your cardio, lift weights, keeping people accountable. Like, what's the biggest opportunity or like that biggest breakthrough moment that you guys have experienced, that you see on the horizon, or just kind of maybe shed some light on that?
Well, yeah, if I take you back, I started online fitness coaching in 2013. So I was like one of the really early adopters. And gosh, I wish I knew now what, like during the opportunity that I had then, I just wish I knew what I knew now. And I'll be frank, it was so easy back then. It was so easy in such a blue ocean and nobody was doing it. And the Instagram algorithm was in sequential order. Every single one of your followers saw your post. I'd figured out how to do like share for share, shout out for shout out. I mean, I could just push a button and gain 1,000 legitimate followers in a day. And I just was like, wow. But I had no idea that that was even good. I had no perspective. I was just like, well, you know, sure, I'll pay $100 for 1,000 new leads.
Yeah, she was signing up. She was signing up 50 to 60 new clients a month, literally just with like post. And it would be like, here's my price, email me and I'll send you a checkout.
It was silly. It was the wild, wild west back then. Yeah. But what I will say is there were other people doing it back then. And most of them they have regular jobs now because it doesn't work like it used to work. And I don't mean regular job in like a demeaning way or anything like that. It's just they don't have thriving businesses anymore. So I'd say the biggest like evolution from there, and like I feel like, you know, some luck was involved early on, but beyond that, being willing to admit like I didn't know what I didn't know. Partnering with Jordan was honestly a big, big eye opener. When we started Transform Together Systems, it's ironic that that's the name because Jordan actually understood business systems. And the only thing I really had going for me is I had grit. I was willing to work 70 hours a week. I was like, I can manage all this. I can do all this. That's such a stupid strategy because hard work isn't scalable. And so when Jordan and I partnered and he was able to actually show me like effective business systems, ways to leverage my time, a CRM, who knew? Like who knew you could track and follow up with leads and things like that? So like we've had many of those over the years. The next one was the evolution to get away from organic, but realize that organic was only going to take us so far and to like learn how to pay for advertising, and then to get over my own limiting belief and money mindset that came with like paying for advertising. I mean, now we spend damn near $100,000 a month on advertising.
And that's like Facebook ads, YouTube ads, Instagram ads.
Yeah. Those are the two biggest hurdles I personally had to overcome in business along the journey.
This industry is funny because health and fitness coaches, they really aren't very good at business. So if you look at it competitively, if you can just apply the way that I like to think about it, and I tell coaches this all the time, you have an obsession. You really love the fitness aspects, like the mechanics, the biomechanics, the physiology, and all those things. It's a science, right? well, if you can like kind of apply that same passion to marketing and sales and building systems, you'll have such a competitive advantage to everybody else, because everybody else, like, they're just like, look at my awesome workouts. Let me post these. And like, my workouts are the best. You should, you know, buy my workouts. Like, if you understand the science of like persuasion and getting people to do things and like systems and follow-up and marketing, like, dude, you'll accelerate so far past everyone.
Yes. To like simplify what you guys are saying in terms of that, it's like someone that's like a full-blown, let's say, genius when it comes to health and wellness, like understanding macronutrients and understanding gut biome, understanding optimization, the Huberman people of the world from like neurological, which speaking to him, I think people, maybe that's when people are delegating to fuck their wives.
That's probably true.
That's the rumor these days. But it's like, let's say someone that is a quote unquote expert, right? When it comes to health and wellness, and they see somebody that is not as quote unquote of an expert. They didn't read as many books. They don't have as many degrees or letters at the beginning or end of their name. See, I'm so dumb. I don't even know if it goes at the beginning. But it's that other person that just understands, like you said, Jordan, they understand business. They understand that I know how to get number one problem in business, qualified leads, right? I know marketing. I know how to run ads. I know how to set up funnels. I know how to measure the ROAS, the return on ad spend, to make sure that these numbers actually make sense to keep deploying money into ads. I know how to get a podcast going or to get on shows so I can get content out there. They have CRMs in place to store the client's information and then have a drip campaign set up to email them or to text them to see how many contact attempts that we've had, right? So you're saying that's basically the biggest thing, right, Jordan? Is like they're coming to you guys saying, hey, look, we're just getting started, or we really need to break through this ceiling that we have, whether again it's six figures, seven figures, or eight figures. And it's usually just tweaking those things, right?
Yeah. A lot of it's the mindset behind it, though. I think most really great practitioners out there, they become great practitioners because they care more about what their peers think than they do care about growing their business. They fear more rejecting or getting embarrassed or shameful in that thought of like, oh, I care about what people think. They fear that more than they fear failure. Where if you have someone who fears failure more than they care about what people think, then they're willing to do what it takes in order to get the person into their program to help change their life. So a lot of times these people are like, you know, oh, I would never say it like that. You know, like Lane Norton might call me out, or, oh, I would net like, so they end up struggling, you know? So then you have someone else who maybe is less qualified, but they come in and they're like, oh, I see why I need to position my marketing in this way because it leads to more leads coming in. So it's a net positive for the people I'm going to help. I think that's the biggest thing that like stops most of them.
I agree.
Jordan, what do you think is the biggest, because you hear like systems and processes, right? Like what are some things that you see to be like the number one issue or number one thing that people can take away? Do you think it's running ads? Do you think it's creating like an affiliate program? Do you think it's, you think it's putting content out every day? Is it making YouTube videos? Is it sending an email campaign, a text campaign? Is it getting SDRs that are scheduling appointments and getting sales team? Like, is it creating a new offer and being like, what is it? Like, what if you could say like, dude, this is the one thing, no matter if you are early stage entrepreneur or seasoned entrepreneur, I believe XYZ, or I just believe this one thing is like the core thing to know to break through.
Dude, if you just simplify it, right? Like if you're trying to get to 10, 15K a month, if you can have one channel that you acquire leads from, one platform. So let's say that's Facebook, and I'm going to do Facebook outreach to groups. Like number one thing, you need to generate 15 leads a day. That's it. If you can get 15 new leads a day, and then if of those 15, you're able to get one or two of those to book a like call with you, you know? And then of those who book like a little check-in report call, if you get like half of those to schedule a sales call, at the end of the month, you'll sign 3, 4, 5 clients a month. Do that to 10, 15,000 a month. Then you just need to start like capitalizing on that lead flow a little bit more efficiently. We're okay now, instead of me going out and like manually finding leads, I'm going to spend a little bit of that money on advertising. Then when I get the lead, I'm going to have an email, a funnel, SMS system they come into. So I start to automate a little bit of those processes, but nothing really changes. Just the efficiency of everything becomes more using my skills and my money to nurture and to follow up and all of those things. But the baseline system doesn't really change. Dude, you can scale to $1 million easily with like one channel, one funnel, one sales process, and one offer. But most people think they need like 8 of those things in order to scale.
Do you guys do other offers now? You guys have like the T4 systems, and then you had mentioned the accelerator to legacy. I believe you guys do some events as well, right? Like holistically, what would you say if you're in the online fitness space, hypothetically, you should consider having XYZ products over time?
Yeah. So we don't own T4E Systems anymore. We sold that company in 2022. So that was the online fitness coaching company. We had that for about a decade and then exited that. We were having a baby at the time, and IFCA is our baby that takes up our time. So IFCA is the mentoring other fitness coaches. But in terms of what you need as an online fitness coach, really, it breaks down to simple math. I can't tell you how often I get on the phone with somebody and they're like, I have this membership, and then I do this group offer, and then I do one-to-one. Well, then sometimes I'm in person too. Okay, how much you charge for that? $30 a session. They just have, you know, their eggs in so many baskets. And we break it down simply. It's like their dollar per hour, right? What's your most leverage? What's making you the most amount of money? What's easiest? Well, what's easiest to scale is the more expensive thing. And where people get caught up. So to answer your question, it's offer that one-to-one high touch offer and really, really, really help someone. But where people get caught up and they think they can't do that is, well, I don't know how I'd charge that much. Okay, well, make your product better. Make your service better. And if you focus on that, it's so much easier to get 10 clients that are paying you $500 a month than it is to get you 500 clients that are paying you $10 a month on a subscription.
A little.
Yeah, that's, what are your guys' thoughts as well? Because like everyone online now is a coach, a consultant, an entrepreneur, an influencer. Everyone has their own mastermind group. Everyone has their own events. Everyone has their own community and best this, best that, which I don't say that from a pessimistic standpoint. I say that from I'm genuinely curious on your guys' like take on going through the journey the last decade and being in the fucking trenches with all this, as far as like the next, like, what do you guys see to be like that next thing, that next opportunity? Is it the Monday coaching calls with your 37 clients on there? Is it a more intimate event? Is it the sauna, cold plunge, microdosing? what is that? What do you guys see to be that next thing?
Well, I think we are in a little bit of an echo chamber, right?
That's like, I was gonna say, yeah.
Man, if you just look at the raw math, there might be, like, if you look at the number of, say, online coaches versus people in the US, right? Let's say there's 340 million people in the US. I think we know that 40 to 50% of them are overweight or obese. You know, maybe that's 158 million. Dude, there might be like a couple hundred thousand coaches right now. And dude, the reality is, like, most estimates, they say that the online virtual fitness coaching space is set to grow by 35% calculated annual growth rate over the next several years. By 2027, they expect this industry to be $134 billion. It was $34 billion in 2019. So like, if you get in this industry and you just grow at the rate of the industry growth, you will grow. So like, I don't think that there's this idea of there are already too many people doing it. I think it's fallacy because that's all we see. But there are two ways to get into it.
You sorry to cut you off, but you guys like to see the COVID vaccines and the seed oils. You guys are like, fuck yeah, keep driving business, baby.
I mean,
well, COVID, I mean, obviously caused our business to explode. You know, I didn't love the experience. It was a lot of bullshit, but you know, when gyms shut down, everybody decided they want to be an online coach, and that was great for us. But yeah, to your point,
great for so many of our clients because they finally took the leap. They thought forever they wanted to do it online, but they couldn't when they were forced to. It was amazing for so many of them.
Yeah, and I think, but to answer your question, man, I think where this is going, and like to get into the business to grow really efficiently, you've got to either be the best, you know, like Elaine Norton, like some of these guys who spend a lot of time like positioning themselves as the best. That's one way to do it. Probably take about a decade. Or you come into it and you figure out a way to be different and unique. So for example, leveraging things like AI and genetic testing and optimization-based methods, I think are really appealing to people, and it's going to appeal to a more sophisticated, wealthy market. So like, if you're going to get into this, man, figure out how to solve really rich people's problems. What do they want? Like, I even thought of an offer recently that I was like, dude, somebody should just steal this. Like, what you should do is get some genetic tests, and you basically set people up with like a genetic fat loss program. And all you do is you send them the genetic test. They take it. You get the results. You upload that into ChatGPT, and it analyzes these genetic results across millions of data points. It gives you like a personalized approach based on your genes. That's how you create something unique versus like, hey, I help you reach your fat loss goals with customized workouts and nutrition.
I'm glad we got to this because this was my biased opinion. I think my unsolicited advice to you guys and people in the online space in terms of health and wellness is targeting people like me, online entrepreneurs that understand that's been around the block in terms of understanding the value of health, understanding macros, understanding seed oils. When I say understand, just get the gist, right? Like, hey, fat ass, burn more calories than you consume, right? Go and lift some weights, run some miles, walk some miles, right? Like, but how can you optimize? I think that's the best word to use. That's the key word, the lingo. It's like, hey, go get blood work done, understand your hormones, testosterone levels, again, sauna, cold plunge, red light therapy, set holistic practices, stem cells, peptides, where someone can maybe buy a high ticket, very, very high ticket.
Yeah, that's extremely valuable.
Like a package deal to...
Yeah.
Like a Tony Robbins, right? Like what Tony Robbins has been doing for 20, 30 years, making that more essentially normal.
Yeah, that's one offer that's extremely valuable, but there are so many, you know, and really what it takes is solving one person's very expensive, painful problem. It takes them to go, you know, it's not that I'm shopping for an online fitness coach. I'm not shopping around. I'm not looking for the cheapest price. But what you said, holy shit, that's me. Like, felt like you read my diary. So it's so much different from like, most coaches will say, niche down, and you'll make so much money. As if like we were to say, oh, I help busy women. And all the busy women are like, oh my God, sign me up, whatever price, because I'm a busy woman. Nobody really thinks that way. But when you say, you know, I help postpartum moms with pelvic prolapse who pee when they run and they're depressed and they feel this way. And like, I fix all those things. I help with the pelvic floor. I do this. I, you know, your mental health. That's when people get on the phone with you and they're like, I don't even care. Like, I need help in all these areas of my life. And I don't care if it's 2 grand, 10 grand, doesn't matter. Like, if you're going to solve this really big problem for me. So I think we're kind of on the topic of like niching. Stop asking yourself, who do I help? Start asking yourself, what problem do I solve?
Yeah.
And there's where you get a high ticket offer.
Really? Yeah, I think for women, like women, if I were starting from scratch, it would be women who are type A, highly driven, working, you know, raising kids, all those things. We solve your cortisol issue. If it was men, it'd be like, hey, you're run down, you don't have much sex drive, you're gaining a little bit of belly fat. I solve the testosterone issue. It just fix that problem.
Yeah, yeah, this is a three-step protocol of being able to pole vault from your dick out of bed.
That's great.
Yeah. That is great. Yeah. We're going to go for that in IFC watch right now. That's definitely a big promise.
That's a hook for your guys' next ad. But I definitely agree. And I think that just with people our age, like, you know, late 20s, 30s, I mean, shit, even 20s to 40s, right? Like the everyday, quote unquote, busy person, no matter what their income level is, it's not necessarily niching down to where you can only help them. It's just targeting that specific pain point, having that mindset and approach with it. So I love your guys' take on that as well. What's the big problem that you guys are facing right now? Like, what's that? And maybe there's no quote unquote problems in terms of business or life or something that you guys are working through. I know you guys just had the kiddo about a year and a half ago. The business is growing. You guys are making money. Clients are happy. You have events and different offers. But like, what's on the horizon? What's next? What's potentially holding you guys back?
I could pull up a list.
I'm like, do we want to go personal? Do we want to go business?
I mean, the bigger you grow, man, the bigger the levels, bigger the devils. You know, you just have to learn how to kind of compartmentalize and focus on just what's most important to solve. But Aaron, did you have anything you wanted to highlight?
Jordan's like, yeah, which
fucking list of Angela.
Problems right now.
Well, and do you think that there maybe could not be any necessary problems? Because
oh no, there definitely are. At any given time in business, there are 20. And I actually just recorded a podcast about this, about like managing your business anxiety, because business will give you a lot of anxiety because so many things are just dichotomies that need to be managed. They're not problems to solve. They're not like there's nothing you can do about it. It's just there. And that's really hard for people to wrap their head around. Like our students get on calls and they're like so stressed about this thing. And I'm like, well, what problem are we even solving? And they're just like, well, but what if it happens? I'm like, well, what if? Like, why don't we talk about it then? You know, because there's just so many things to always worry about. So I think when you ask the question, I like have this list, but none jump off because I don't need to solve any of them today, or there's already a plan to solve some of them.
So in our brains, if there's not a problem, we like to, again, the anxiety likes to start creating them in our own heads.
Oh, yeah. So go break some shit to fix it. Yeah, like you always just want to really understand what your core business constraint is, right? Like what's the one thing that if you just focused on that would unlock revenue? And for us over the last 6 months, we've been kind of stuck at the same revenue level, which, you know, isn't a huge thing, but I'm starting to get kind of tired of that. We've been kind of stuck between anywhere from like 650 to 750K months. And like, you know, we've had some bigger ones, all that, but like our core constraint right now is kind of two part. It's number one, product market fit. So it's differentiating because there's a lot of competitors. We're in a very low barrier to entry market. So a lot of people are coming in the space, you know, offering the same thing. So the only way to be competitive is if you continue to innovate and develop your product. So that's all we focused on over the last 8 or 9 months. More done for you elements. We've developed some software, kind of SaaS products, running ads for clients, really, really differentiating. And so there's that. And then scaling a sales team. Sales team is a very, very hard thing to manage. And so at a certain point in your business, though, it becomes less about how and more about who, right? Like who do we need to recruit and hire in order to come solve this problem? So that's what we focused on the sales side is removing Aaron from that. We just recruited a really high level guy, brought him in. And man, if you can just like put like blinders on and just realize like there are all these little appendages, like Aaron said, dichotomies to be managed. But at a certain point in your business, it's almost like driving a car and, you know, you got a wheel bearing that's like clanking and whatever. And it's like, okay, like I could pull over the side of the road and fix this, or I could just turn my radio up a little bit. Well, what most people do is they're like, oh, my wheel bearing's clanking. So let me just run this car off the side of the cliff. But it's like, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah, everything was totally fine.
Or it's like a weird way to put it as well. It's like where you think that your phone vibrated. Yeah, and they didn't at all. And you're like, dude, there's nothing wrong, right? Like, we're good. But if the business didn't exist, or you had to be forced to stop operating the business, what would you guys do? Would you guys invest in, I know you have a background investing in some real estate. I'm sure that you guys have, assets in different asset classes, whether it's crypto, stocks. I'm curious on your guys' take when it comes to outside of the fitness space, just curious from like a personal standpoint where you guys see opportunity for people to place their money. And obviously none of this is financial, tax, legal advice. It's just what you guys
I'm such an opportunist. I have to not ask myself this question on a continual basis because I'm always like, in my next life I'd have this business, and if I had more time I'd have this business, and I'd want to go back to school for this and do this. The ones right off the top of my head, I've been really into wealth management lately. I have a really awesome like wealth management advisor coach, and it's just so fun to just kind of play with your own money and learn, oh, I can put this over here and utilize this tax strategy, and I can borrow this money, just this money. And
yeah. What are some different vehicles that you've learned over the years?
Yeah. I'm so glad you asked. Honestly, I really do. So at our business, I don't know if this will resonate or like be good advice for anybody on the call. And again, like not financial advice, but the biggest thing we've really done that's helped us a lot in the last couple of years is learn so many legal ways to reduce tax liability. And it took us a $500,000 tax bill for me to go, man, I don't know if everyone does this. is everyone just paying the IRS this much money? Like, is there any other way? And I just started saying that to people. I was like, gosh, like, is this just the way it is? Like, you just do this? And one of my good friends was like, no. She's like, you should talk to this guy. And so I, the financial mentor that I just mentioned, he has us doing all kinds of stuff. So we have like a whole family office set up now and multiple LLCs and stuff. But a couple of the most interesting things that we did. So we're an S Corp. And an S Corp, you know, you have like, you can look up like US tax brackets online. You can see what bracket you're in. A C Corp, though, according to one of the Trump laws, and I don't know if it'll be this way forever, a C Corp, their maximum cap, tax cap is 20%. So one of the things we did is we made our C Corp a management company. Our S Corp pays the C Corp, and then we're taxed 20% on that money. We also created
which, super quick, when people set up an LLC, you can select how you want to be taxed, right? So depending on your income levels and as your income's growing, right? Like that's when I come back to one of my principles, right? When I'm talking to qualified leads or people in general to kind of figure out where they are, like, okay, do they need to make more money, keep more, invest in it, is all the above, right? Like most of the time they're like, well, you know, I'm like, dude, we don't need to talk about, we need to hand you off to some advisors and or tell you to go use depreciation on real estate or to go buy a section 179 heavy car so you could write this off and go do this and this. Dude, I need to hear that you just paid $500,000 in taxes and you're sick of that. Then we'll take the next. But take a step back. That's more for you guys got to the point where generating so much income, different streams coming in to go, okay, how are we going to claim this income in a sense to where we're taking advantage of one of the many loopholes and advantages of being an entrepreneur, business owner, of mitigating our tax, because a dollar saved is a dollar earned. If that reduces tax liability by 10, 20%, I mean, shoot, that's literally like making an extra month of income.
Yeah. And that's the thing too. Oftentimes, you know, I have early entrepreneurs asking me this and I'm like, worry about making money before you worry about saving money, right? You're making 60 grand a year, just make more money. We're not even gonna talk about this right now. But eventually, like you said, it does start to be worth it. It really started to be worth my time after a little while where I'm like, you know, I spend a few hours a week on this and I'm saving us 50 grand a month now, you know? But another fun thing we did where anytime I tell people this one, they're usually like, oh, I didn't even know that was a thing. So we self-insure our company. So insurance for our company was a big thing for me, you know, just from a liability sake. And just like life insurance, you can buy it or you can rent it. You can do the same thing with business insurance. So we purchase our own policy. Every dollar we put into that policy is 100% tax deductible. So it's great. It's there in case we need to use it for the policy. We're also not having to pay taxes on that, which is really awesome. So between those couple of strategies, those were the biggest needle movers to bring down a ton of our liability. We've done a bunch of other stuff. We have four rental properties that we do, like the depreciation and those types of things too.
Captive insurance, right? Where you're able to get the insurance for the business. And then it's essentially where you're able to use that vehicle to, and I call it vehicles in terms of like, how my brain works or thinks of it at least, to where you could borrow from it or, you know, utilize how you wish, which obviously when you're typically borrowing from different assets, whether it's a self-directed retirement account or, you know, stocks or XYZ portfolio, it's essentially tax-free money.
So this is actually business liability insurance, not life insurance. We're doing life insurance next. I have money set aside for that. So we can invest that money, but it has to be there in case of a claim. Like I went through a whole underwriting process and everything. So like right now we have it in a 5% treasury because it needs to stay pretty liquid because it is insurance money. Like,
and that would be if you got sued or something happened.
Exactly. If we lost a key team member, if one of us got sick, you know, because as entrepreneurs, you don't have workers' comp. You don't have, you know, those kind of things.
Yeah, we do have about $1.5 million with Morgan Stanley, and that's all in just some treasury bonds, like low risk, you know. And we can use that. We can deploy it. But we actually just put an offer into a house today. Well, like, we were able to take a deposit mortgage loan off that. So basically that $1.5 million, we were able to take a loan off that for like 2% over Fed basis point or something like that. And so that's earning 4% interest. We're going to pay another 2% on it, but we're just going to throw that at the house and then immediately start paying that back. So really, it's only like a 2% interest mortgage loan on that, which is pretty cool.
Or, you know, you can use that essentially as like a cash offer and do what's, you know, there's a lot of different terminology in legal and business and real estate investing in general, but like delayed financing, right? Where you might be able to use that as a cash offer. Maybe, one, just win the offer, right? In a competitive market, or two, win the offer and maybe get a better sticker price on it, and then do late financing where you can, because you paid cash, you know, you can essentially go to a bank and quote unquote refinance simultaneously and boom, get 80, 90 or X percent of your money back. And that's what I could process tremendously.
Yeah. back to your original question where you'd asked, like, what else are you interested in? I think the reason I'm so interested in investing is because what makes someone a great entrepreneur is like the opposite of what makes someone a great investor, as I've learned. So it's a real, real challenge for me, because what makes you a great investor? Patience and putting something somewhere and not touching it. Time, you know, as an entrepreneur, you're like, all right, I tested this for 90 days and it's not working. I need to move my money. I need to do something else. Right. So it's been a fun challenge to have something else that it's like, okay, so now all we have to do with this is make a few smart moves and leave it there. It's like, it's testing such a skill.
Yeah. I believe heavy in Bitcoin too. I'm not sure. I feel like you're probably a crypto guy, but like, I throw a lot of money at Bitcoin. I just think long term, that's the vehicle that people are going to believe in most.
Yeah, I'm actually curious, Jordan, to hear your take on that as to why. But really quick though, back the reason why I asked that question, like the business aside, because you had mentioned, Jordan, like the business has been a little stagnant between, you know, $600,000 to $800,000 months. I potentially argue to say, and this is not to project or give unsolicited advice, of course, right? Like, hey, you can break through seven figures. You guys can any goal you want, right? But the point is that is usually the common theme and pattern that we see. It's like what got us here is not going to get us there. So in reality, maybe we actually don't need to break through seven figures consistently a month. Maybe we just need to keep this going, make sure that we have the best people on the team and we're managing this. And it starts turning into being rich versus being wealthy, which is more of a manager of managing this and optimizing the money to say, well, actually, this strategic step or these seven strategic steps from the family office of working with our advisors, I mean, shoot, this is basically guaranteed 20% growth year after year, the month.
Yeah. You're 100% right.
Well, man, we have this conversation every day. The only thing is, it's not even about money for us anymore. It has so much to do with our team and their vision and their ability to make money. We have plenty of money. You know what I mean? If it were just about that, I'm always like, anytime we're freaking out about business or something, I tell Jordan, I'm like, look, all we have to do with like the money we've made in the last decade is just not fuck it up. Like we can just leave it alone and it will earn enough interest and we'll be fine for the rest of our lives. So like you get to that point and we don't do business anymore for the money, you know? So it's tricky though, because you can't keep quality team members unless you're still growing. Or at least that's a belief that we have, because we're like, you know, A players, they want to be on a rocket ship. They want to know that we're going to hit the $1 million months and we're going to be the best in the industry. So that's really the driving factor.
Yeah. And to set up really good comp packages with people, you know, you want to have certain growth incentives, because otherwise you're just paying them based on like fixed numbers that then if the business declines, you're still paying them X amount. So like a lot of our leadership comp structures are based on growth, you know, and it's like, I don't want to set up a comp structure where I'm like, hey, if we grow, you're going to get this. But in the back of my head, I'm like,
we don't want to grow.
Plan on doing that.
Yeah. And that's it too, right? That's the tricky part that, I mean, you guys could be regurgitating this information that you're working with the family office and likely paying a lot of money and investing a lot of time and energy and resource to where you could teach this one key employee team member about life insurance, whether it's whole life, IUL, or understanding how to go buy a real estate investment property, how to do X, Y, Z. And you guys, that alone is like, hey, I just helped John Smith on the team.
I just helped you make $100,000 more a year or whatever it is. Yeah.
So I'm actually going to reduce your commission. Yeah.
No, that's great advice. We've talked about that. We've talked about just doing continuing education for our staff along those lines. And that motivates me even more we really need to get that together.
Yeah. Or have you come in and teach it?
Yeah, let's go. I'm down. I found having all the way up to, you know, almost 100 employees at peak is like a thing called PPFs, personal professional financial goals, because in reality, most team members, employees, whatever label you want to put, it usually comes down to like finances. Hey, how much money am I making here? But obviously with you guys, there's this other set of things that they can learn in terms of health and wellness and your guys' expertise. But then you guys are learning and have learned this whole other dynamic of business, this whole other dynamic of wealth, you know, first off, making money, but then wealth management to say, hey, look, you wrote down in our quarterly meeting last year, these three PPFs, personal, professional, financial goals, you're not going to get more commission because you can't even do the first step of helping yourself, the personal side. So you can't help yourself, like the business can't help you make more money. Or it's, hey, unfortunately, you know, you weren't able to hit those goals in terms of income, or you did, or you exceeded that. But look, you guys were able to implement life insurance, whether it's whole life, term, whatever it is. And that gives you more peace of mind. And maybe you dollar cost average into Bitcoin. Like you said, Jordan, it usually goes up over 300% year after year. That alone, instead of putting money in your savings account, which is usually losing 7 to 10% of its value year after year, you're actually up 200% by just tweaking this one thing. And so I think that's what's been helpful, at least for me, in getting them to write out their PPFs every year. And then you just analyze it quarterly and monthly, depending on the structure and meetings and all that fun stuff, to where it kind of helps you help them, right? To say like, hey, we don't need to be so focused on this check-in of your performance to see how much money you're making. Are you doing this other stuff? And then that helps, you know, them tremendously, as you guys know. But Jordan, what about for you, man? What would you be doing as far as, or maybe enjoying more of it that you have been surprised about the last 6 months, a year or so?
Yeah, personally, I just still really enjoy like the game of business, what we're doing right now. But man, if I could get into anything, it would be buying businesses, you know, businesses that have, you know, because we're in a great time right now where like a lot of the baby boomers are coming up to the end of the road. They have nobody to take these businesses over. And man, I just look at so many of these small companies because I've worked in a lot of different industries. And I just get excited really over business. And it's not as much the vehicle. Like I could get just as bored with fitness, what we're doing now, as I would a laundromat, you know? So it's like, and so I would just really love the space to go buy up some businesses and like grow their actual value through like marketing systems, pricing structure, hiring a few key operators. And man, I would have a lot of fun with that. Like let Aaron manage real estate holdings, and you know, I'll still do a little coaching on the side, but that'd be my next.
Yeah.
You think it would be, like home service type businesses? I saw you building a foosball table, I think, for your kids. So you seem like a handy guy.
No.
That foosball table took me like an hour and a half this morning. Yeah.
I would still be reading the instructions if I was you. So
I've got a lot of experience in service-based businesses. So like HVAC, you know, kitchen equipment, commercial type businesses like that. I'd probably go that direction because I've worked in that industry and I feel like I could pretty quickly raise an intrinsic value of that company.
I feel like none of those guys understand marketing either.
No.
They're just technicians.
That's funny that you guys bring this up, because what I personally see in speaking with you guys and understanding more of your story, expertise, and just knowledge of information that you guys have, that's really what it comes down to, is information and having the right information in the quickest amount of time and the most cost-effective amount of time and implementing it, of course. But I'm curious as to why you guys have not considered, and maybe you have considered, doing just business coaching and consulting.
Really?
More general, you mean?
Yeah, just more like to guys like me, to home service type businesses. Like, hey, do you have an HVAC and you want to, or a roofing company? Have you guys considered?
Yeah, I mean, we've like thrown it out, but like it's...
Yes, health and fitness coaches are just our bread and butter. We just got our system so dialed at this point. We're like, come here. We know what to do. It would feel like it'd be a lot of upfront work. And man, we put so much work into IFCA. And the total addressable market for fitness coaches is still huge. In some ways, I think the main reason we're not doing it is because it would mean like we just weren't good enough with fitness coaches. Why not just help more of them? You know what I mean? Like it's kind of the same advice we were just giving about like niching down, solving one problem. Like we solved this problem really, really well. Why not just stay built?
Yeah. Like for example, and we will do things like that eventually, I'm sure, when maybe we sell this business or move out of it down the line. But we were working with the Hormozis at one point. We were one of their acquisition partners and a few years ago. And I had a guy offer me, I think it was like 70 or 80 grand for the year to coach him one-on-one, you know? And I'm like, damn, that's like pretty legit. And it was like a call a week, you know, whatever. So I brought it to Alex and I was like, hey man, I feel like I should do this, right? Extra 80 grand on the P&L. He's like, don't do it. I'm like, well, why? He's like, all right. And he sat down, he like ran the math. And he's like, the way the math broke down, he's like, if you just spent that hour that you would be on calls with that guy growing IFCA, you'll make three times as much. because of the leverage that you have, right? So I don't want to do anything that would require me to do manual input coaching, even if it was 100K a year, 200K a year. So, man, if I could just deploy that same energy into something that we have a team and a system around, I feel like I could grow faster.
Have you guys considered taking a like ownership in some of your clients to where you say, hey, instead of paying, you know, X amount high ticket or whatever, we have different offers to where you can pay high ticket and then reoccurring to stay in this model to, you know, high ticket to, if you really want to, you know, break through like a vested interest to where you're helping them grow their net profit. And based on that, more ownership that you guys have. Have you guys thought about that?
We started out.
I love that you're asking all these questions, by the way, because these are the questions that I'm always asking. And he's like, no. No new ideas, no new businesses.
Yeah, dude, if I didn't have a kid, I'd be like, fuck yeah, because I'll just, you know, fuck it. Like, let's work 15 hours a day. But like, we're at a point in our lives right now where we're trying to have a second kid. And I think eventually there'd be an opportunity to do that. But the only problem is, Tyler, is like with our business clients, like our biggest client, we have one that does like maybe 200K a month or 300K a month. Yeah. Like most of our clients are doing like 40, 50, 60K a month. Like, and that's like really good. And so for them, like there wouldn't be enough split, you know, like I don't, like if I took 5% of your profit, it's like not enough to excite me, you know, and it's like, cool, we can maybe double that or 3X that. The only reason it would make sense would be a business like ours. Like, hey, you're at 3-4 million a year right now. And now it makes sense. We'll help you get to 10. But a fitness coaching business is like pretty hard to scale because of price points. You know, they're selling $2,500. I mean, that's like expensive packages. Like, we'd want to work with a business that has more expensive product, higher gross margin, higher profit, that's more scalable, you know,
to go. Would that be even possible is probably a question as well, right? Because, you know, you're like, is our model even able to get to the next amount of money, right? So even if we're not able to, there's somebody else, right? So I'm sure those questions come up. Who do you guys get coaching and mentorship from? You guys had mentioned Formosi, and I was kind of thinking in the back of my mind, like, you, like, I mean, everyone on the internet, especially around our age online, they've all seen, you know, Alex with his nose strip on, jacked as fuck, just telling people what to do in business and crushing it. But what are some people that you guys have gotten a lot of value from?
The Formosis help us a lot. We mentioned one of our biggest constraints recently has been scaling a sales team. Cole Gordon's company, Closers.io, they've been great. We've been with them for like 2.5 years. They're extremely tactical, like on the sales team front. But Cole's just really a business genius. He's helped us in a lot of different ways. He's such a great strategic thinker. Last year, I was a part of a group called CEO Mama, which was really cool. Natalie Ellis, she's like the creator, founder of Boss Babe. She had a daughter around the same time I had my son. And so she created this community of women, which is like all 7-8 figure female entrepreneurs who have at least one child over under seven, which was really neat because I felt extremely lost after having a kid. I'm like, who am I now? This nurturing side of me or business side of me? So that was a cool community to be a part of. Who else has helped us out along the way?
Yeah, I mean, early back in the day, you know, we worked with Jason Phillips for a little bit. I mean, that was like years ago, 2017. We've been with Cole's company for quite some time, you know, and we've also invested in like some one-off consulting and things like that. But we're kind of like in the market right now, you know, for like who's our next mentor, but at least for the next like 6 months, we kind of know what we need to do. You know, so yeah.
Like,
yeah, and again, more just unsolicited advice from me. I'm sure you guys are like,
yes. I love it, man.
I'm really enjoying this conversation.
And all your ideas and everything you've shared, I'm like, yeah, I do want to do that, man. But I'm like, I just don't want to sacrifice time right now.
Yes. Well, I think that's it. I think that's, you know, I was even mentioning this offline before we got started. Like, I think that, and again, this is just coming off of my experience, right? This is never to project or say people can't do a million or a couple million a month and whatnot. It's just like the ROI, like legitimately does not make sense at all to double the business because it's not capped, but to an extent it is because we have to do X, Y, Z. Rather than just understanding these other vehicles of keeping more of this money or making more investments from a time perspective, as we mentioned, Jordan, right? So it's like it doesn't even potentially make sense. But another area, so I have this belief that the 9-to-5, the side hustle, right? That's pretty obvious at this point. But in terms of like health and wellness and opportunity, I think the target towards like fathers and being good parents and being a mother and, you know, bringing those communities together, I think that is an interesting opportunity in terms of the identity change and the identity crisis of like, I was posting this way. Now that doesn't matter as much as far as telling the world how much revenue I make and how cool I am online to like, I just want to be a fucking dad or I want to be a mom. And there's these new set of problems that I didn't have before in operating my six-figure business, seven-figure business, eight-figure business, or I just don't give a fuck about those.
Yeah, that's in it.
Now, I would rather just do this, and I'd rather build a community around this new demographic. I personally foresee, again, it's an age thing, right? That around our age, people are starting to have their first or second kid, and that's what I'm seeing. I think more people are going to want to be strategically offline to an extent.
That I'm
yeah, so. I agree. Yeah, we've always said that our next move after this business in terms of coaching would be a like parent-based, couple-based entrepreneur community offer, mastermind, whatever you want to call it. Cause like that is what we really enjoy. And that's who like we enjoy working with these days, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know if the parent, the dynamic we know really, really well is the husband and wife who are in business together. We would love to have a small intimate mastermind of couples who are in business together. We can talk about the relationship goals. We can talk about the business goals. We can talk about all the challenges. And just the community piece, like you said, I mean, it's not when it becomes to not about scaling a business, the revenue, like what I want to do, who do I want to talk to, how do I want to spend my days?
Well, that you guys find yourself helping your clients with a lot of those things that they may not have, quote unquote, paid for in terms of the pain point. They came to you guys for getting more leads, growing their revenue. But you guys find yourself saying, yeah, Aaron was pissed off at me for 3 days straight.
My husband.
I had to do, right? And that actually helped our business. Do you guys find yourself giving that feedback or sharing that feedback with your clientele?
Yeah. From the like relationship side, we have one of our top clients, they're a husband and wife partnership, but we don't have that many. I think because a lot of people ask me, should I do it? And I'm like, no, I don't think it's for everybody. I really don't.
Because I have no.
Yeah, it's not easy, man. There's cycles. Aaron gets a lot of the like, I'm a business owner, now I have a kid. My identity is like ripping out of my face.
Yeah, we have a lot of those conversations. We just, and it's cool. We've created a really cool mom community inside of IFCA. We had a student hop on an open office hour call the other day and she's on the verge of tears. She's like 7 months pregnant. And she's like, you know, I thought everything was going right and now it's not. And it's all going to crumble right before I have my baby. And just it was just emotions, right? Emotional overload. It was like, first of all, no, this is even a problem. Everything is fine. These are hormones. This is normal. And we're like four moms on the call. And we're all like, you know, she just had this idea of motherhood and what it was going to look like and how hard it was going to be. And all of us were like, you know, it's not as hard as you think. And you're going to get bored and your business is going to be fine. And you're going to be able to balance both. It was just like such a beautiful call for 15 minutes. We were all just like hyping her up that, like, you know, you're going to figure this out. Which to your point, yeah, like, you know, nothing's just business problems. Business is personal. Personal is business. So we find ourselves 80% of the time working on the entrepreneur rather than the tactic.
If I get those questions, I'm like, let me just see your data constraints tracker.
Send them to my call or Travis's call.
Yeah, Jordan, who did you have to become to be a successful entrepreneur? I know you have a background with opioid addiction and substance abuse to being super vulnerable, which is not common for men, let alone successful men. And I'm curious person that you had to become along the journey and how you are able to not let those previous habits and thought patterns, you know, creep back in with all this responsibility and, you know, pressure on your back.
Well,
I can answer it for you too.
I'm still trying to figure that out, man. I'm still trying to become that person. You know, like, I do think that at different levels, you know, you made a great way to open that question because it's a lot of times less about what you need to do and who it is you need to become. And for me, I've got such an addictive personality, man. Like, such an addictive personality. It's still, I still deal with it all day, every day. Like, I get into these cycles where maybe I'm drinking a little bit too much or, you know, using too many Zens or even getting addicted to cold plunge or sauna, or I get addicted to breath work. I get addicted to about every freaking thing. And, you know, it's just for me, the only thing that's been able to work is just to try to keep those addictions focused in the right places rather than try to like avoid that part of my personality or constantly auditing myself. And even right now, I'm having a little bit of problems with alcohol. I told a team member, say, I'm not drunk right now, but like, you know, like the, hey man, I'll have like a couple margaritas and like that slipped into like three nights a week, four nights a week. And I'm like, here it goes again. And it's just like, it's a constant battle, man. And I think who I need to become right now is a person who is more, listen first and speak second. You know, like I'm so aggressive. I'm so abrasive. I'm so confident in a lot of ways that helped me get to where I'm at right now. But now at this point, like I'm trying to learn how to step back, let other people handle things, let things kind of happen without me just trying to constantly like force, you know, because I've always had this belief, man, that I'm not very smart, I'm not very talented, but I'll just like work harder than anyone else. And I do think that served me in a lot of ways. But like now I've kind of just like step off of that, because I think those beliefs and things kind of feed into the addictions, because I'm always looking for the next energy spurt. I'm always looking for the next thing to help me work more, show up more. But that just, it's been fine, you know?
Or like having that margaritas, like that validation or verifying that you got a lot done today, or this is going to help you decompress so you're even more productive tomorrow, right? So it's kind of like that audit internally to say, okay, what's the intention of doing so many cold plunges, or like having to tell the world that I did see cold plunges, right? Or to be so intense about breath work. It's usually that intention, right? To say like, wait, hold up, this is starting to turn into almost like a negative thought pattern to myself, to like, well, why do I need three or four margaritas? Maybe just one. Or do I really even need one at all? That's usually like the common thing.
Constant need for stimulation. You know, I need to be like looking up information, learning about stuff. I get bored.
ADHD.
Yeah. Like I just have trouble.
You were trying to take a fucking nap, but you got yelled at for that.
I know. I created the monster.
Yeah. It's your fault. I think you should just take a nap. But I think it's true, right? It's this weird. It's stimulation. Like the next post, the next lead, the next Stripe notification, the next KPI, and that's all great, right? I'm very aware that, you know, I'll shut up, sissy. Like more. Work hard. But like, it's just obvious that. Work hard is the foundation. Like that's a negotiable, right?
Arena.
Yeah. What's the problem with taking a nap? You know, did you not do something? Okay, well, that's probably going to make you anxious. Did you do something that you regret that might make you feel depressed, right? Or you're just done at 2 p.m. on a Tuesday because you are smart and you did create systems and processes. And then in reality, you can say, yeah, if all my fucking clients aren't done by 2 o'clock on Tuesday either, I might fucking suck as a coach, you know? Or how can we get them to be done at 2 if they need to? So
The other thing I'll add, because I think a lot of men struggle with this, just not Jordan, like from Jordan's evolution over the last 6 years, having been along for the ride, really what he just needed was to believe in himself. Like the person who was like addicted to opioids, like who he is now, that's like, that was the one key missing ingredient. I remember when we met, and it would constantly, you'd say things and you'd second guess it. Was that weird? Was that okay? And I'm like, this is so strange that he does not see the talent that I see. This is so bizarre to me. And so I think what started to happen over time is like you respected me enough and I believed in you. And you're like, well, maybe she's right. I don't know. And so I think a lot of people, they get stuck there where they're like, they don't believe in themselves. And my advice to that is borrow the belief from somebody else until you believe it.
Jordan, what was your background like growing up? Because you're small town Ohio, right? Baling some hay, milking some cows.
100%.
Yeah. Did you just not have like a mentor, anyone around that had ever made money or ever had, you know, quote unquote, valuable information or a lifestyle that you wanted and desired? So you're like, well, I've never really seen anyone around me do it. So how the hell can I?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it sums it up. I grew up in real small town, farm Ohio, like rural Ohio. My family, you know, went through a pretty tumultuous divorce when I was like my early teens. Parents were kind of like a wreck at that time, a lot of just chaos. And, you know, like, the most successful people that I knew in my hometown were farmers. And, you know, I remember one guy telling me like, dude, if you can just make 100K a year, you'll be set. You'll be good. Like, that's all you need. You know, it's like, that was my only goal and was able to achieve that. And I was like, oh, well, this kind of sucks. And then it really wasn't until like really meeting Aaron, because I always loved fitness. I grew up in the gym, my dad bodybuilding and all those things. And I did some personal training on the side, but it wasn't until I met Aaron that we were having a conversation. She was like, yeah, I did 500K last year by myself. And I'd had a lot of the business experience. I started like a buy here, pay here car lot at one point, started like a gag gift product, had like different odds and ends. I won't get too far into it. But when I heard that, I was like, wait, you know, I'm like running the math and stuff. I'm like, you did 500K like a year by yourself. No, you have no team members. And I was like, how much is your product? She's like, oh, it's like $150 a month. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, how do you sleep? But then that made me realize, I'm like, oh, there's a freaking huge potential here. I'm like, I think I should do this.
You're like, I got to get that fucking dog right now. We got to get this dog park.
Yeah, dude. It was kind of like that Wolf of Wall Street scene. I was like, listen, if you show me a bank statement, I'll quit my fucking job right now.
And then you did. And then you took a nap. And I was like, no, that wasn't the agreement.
Yeah, that's not going to happen around here. What do you guys enjoy the most about being parents?
Other than man,
everything.
It's truly the best thing ever. You know, like I didn't know if that'd be the case for me. I used to think I might resent being a parent because I love my business so much, and there's just no way that I'm going to be bored. I don't get how it's so fulfilling. Like words cannot express just how fulfilling and how incredible it is. Currently, the favorite thing though is just witnessing his development. He is 21 months and he's starting to talk and he's starting to put things together. And you just see like where the little associations come from. I'm like, oh, he says it like that because I say it like that. But he takes it so out of context. And it's so just fulfilling to be like, we created this thing together. And I mean, he just is growing rapidly day after day.
Be a good example, man. It's like the other day, went to go change his diaper. And laid him down, pulled the diaper off, and I didn't realize there was like shit in it. I just had no idea. So it fell on my lap, bounced on the ground, and I'm like, Jesus, fuck. And then, dude, of course, for the next like 10 minutes, he's like, Jesus, fuck, Jesus, fuck, Jesus, fuck. And like that was like in the middle of my day, and I'm like, dude, this is hilarious, you know? Like, so it's like, you live life a lot lighter. Like, I'm a pretty serious guy normally, but then like, you know, I'll take breaks during the day, just like peekaboo with him and fuck around, and it's like, just lights you up. Makes you realize that everything that we're doing here, business, to achieving goals and being driven and all that stuff, really doesn't matter. You know, it really doesn't. And that allows you to show up in a much less attached way. And I just think in business, when you're less attached, things work better.
Yeah, less friction, things can flow, right? So what are some things that you guys want to instill into your son and, you know, your future children that maybe weren't instilled in you that helps break the generational trauma or helps the kids elevate to a whole nother level to ensure that they don't do it, hence the name of the podcast, All for Nothing, because most of the time it goes back to poverty within the second generation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you going to just keep asking questions until one of us cries? Is that the game we're playing?
Awesome.
For me, I was given a lot, not financially or anything, upbringing, but like in terms of like my mental health and well-being and my parents believing in me. And I credit like a lot of success to like the mentality my parents gave me. So there's like so much positive there. And there's a lot of things I would do to Jackson that my parents did to me almost accidentally. But I would say the thing that I struggle with that I would like to make sure that he doesn't is I want him to know like he's not what he does. You know, it's who he is, because I tend to attribute a lot of my worth to like, what did I get done today? How much did I produce? I need the scoreboard, whether that's the numbers or, you know, the revenue, or am I winning, or did I do better than this person, or, you know? And it's for me at the end of every day, I struggle with it so bad. Like if I had a successful day or not, I'm usually asking myself, was I productive? And I don't want him to think like that, because there's so much more to life.
I like that.
Yeah, I guess my response would be like, my dad used to always say things like, just make money and everything will be fine. You know, and that was always instilling me, like, just make money and everything else will be fine. And really not the case. Like when you make money, things, like Alex says, like things related to money are fine. But dude, I think what I want to just instill in him is like to just keep exploring your curiosities unapologetically. Like if you're interested in something, be super interested in it. Like do that. And then if you get bored with it, do something else. Like do that as long as it takes until eventually you decide what it is you actually want to like wrap your hands around. And it doesn't matter about the money, man, because like in today's world, we live in such a weird, unique time, man, where it's like, you can literally make money doing just about freaking it. You know, we're back in the day, like it just wasn't the case when we came up. Like, oh yeah, you're passionate about that. Cool. There's no money.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And
sure, there's many arguments that can be said that I have a weird belief that no matter what you do, there's likely at least one opportunity to capitalize on a big shift, such as like NFTs. If you're an artist, right? Like you might be able to take our work and NFTs or whatever it may be, right? But I totally understand what you mean by that. Like, especially where we're from, right? Small town Ohio. It's like, well, most of the time you got a job, you had a warehouse job, bought a house and you just saved in retirement, and 99% of that income just went towards your medical bills and you had nothing to show for it. Whereas now you can make one video on TikTok about how to bale hay, and next thing you know, you have brand deals and a YouTube channel and platform money coming in and blah, 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 blah. So I like that. What are you guys most concerned about? Is it the kindergarten teacher telling your son that he can be a transgender? What's your stance on that type of stuff? Times now, it's like, do you homeschool? Do you go to public school? Do you go to private school? What's going on? Every other day there's a school shooting.
Yeah.
And not to create anxiety. I'm not trying to make you cry.
No, trust me. We think about these things every day.
Well, we're getting ready to move to Nashville. And so like, when we get to that, what we're moving to, I'm going to settle in, get in the community. And what I hope to create is a network of other people with like high income entrepreneurs. And we create a little co-op. You know, we go recruit a teacher who has conservative values. They're not trying to, you know, tell Jackson that he's a transvestite, but then not transvestite, that he's a
canceled.
Oh yeah. That he's, I'm fucked. Yeah. That he's trans. But then once he's trans, now he realizes that he likes girls. So, now he's a lesbian. And then it's just like, what am I? Like, what's going on here? Like, so we would find a teacher who has the same beliefs and basically recruit her away from, or him away from their job and be like, hey, we'll just pay you. Like, we'll all chip in and pay you, $4,000 or $5,000 a month. And you're making $100K a year now teaching our, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 kids.
Really, what I find to be so, I don't even have kids. I don't know why the fuck I think about this. I have nieces and nephews, and you don't want to have kid one day. But I like picture, those small like schoolhouses.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like one room.
Yeah. Like those one rooms. I just visualize this like part of a matrix and pattern of human civilization of like coming full circle. To where like making all this money online to like wanting to be offline and off grid and more like tucked away. That's my joke, is I'm trying to make money online to be more offline.
Yeah.
I feel that.
That would be an incredible business too. Like, we should start a school.
Yeah, schools. Obviously I don't know too much in this area, but like, yeah, school, and this might get me canceled, but the intention around saying this is in a lucrative standpoint in terms of like a ministry or like a church from an education standpoint might be a write-off as well, like a lucrative tax loophole as well. As far as, you guys have a podcast show, you guys are talking, like you guys are making content. What was the intention of you guys coming on my show? I'm curious on like, come under this show with some Zen pouches and ready to fuck some shit up.
He doesn't leave home without a Zen pouch. Zen pouch.
Do you like the Zen pouches? Because I took it one time. I was in the airport at Austin, Texas. My friend was like, I've never smoked a cigarette. And I was like, let me try one of those pouches. Because he's like, dude, it gives you energy. It was like 6 milligrams or 6 grams, whatever it was.
That's heavy if you've never done that before.
And, I'm from rural Ohio, so best believe I've had some Natty Lights and put some mulch in my mouth, some chewing.
I can see that for you.
Oh, yeah. I can try it. And next thing you know, I'm shitting through a screen door. Bad idea. But I put it in, and I have an ultra marathon background from running. Like, I love running. And I was like, oh, my God, I could fucking run 300 miles right now. Like, here we go. And then again, 10 minutes later, I'm like, pouring sweat in the bathroom, like just going out both ends. So that's my lovely experience and visual for everyone listening in, watching with Zen pouches. But isn't there like some weird studies around how nicotine is actually, I don't know if good is the best word to use, but it can be, from a neurological standpoint, actually beneficial?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And I'll first start by saying that Jesus died for our sins. And so, but I just had to say that. No, yeah, man, like there's definitely a lot of evidence out there of its ergonomic benefits. So it helps improve and delay onset in dementia, protect dopamine receptors. It helps with cardiovascular things. Like there's a lot of health benefits to nicotine. It's just when it's delivered through tobacco is where there's a lot of downward effects. But obviously anything that is good, there's a point of diminishing return, right? Like I'll get into cycles where I'm kind of in one right now where like when I'm working, I keep one in all day. So like, although, you know, a few Zens during the day or a few nicotine pouches can be beneficial, you know, 80 milligrams of nicotine in a day probably is not real great, you know,
but 100 better. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the American way, right? Well, if 10 milligrams is good, then 100 is 10 times better. So, you know, but to answer your question, man, like I've just always heard good things about you. I've paid attention to your content for a while. And man, like just getting more connected here lately, like, you know, we don't have many friends in our network who are kind of at the level that we're at and who have the same intentions and like very growth minded. And it just seemed that we had a lot of shared values. So we just wanted to show up just to bullshit. And it's like, well, might as well record it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, it is what it's all about. Like, I think that, again, you guys having a podcast show as well, it's much more than try to do your best to entertain, inform, and have fun. But in my personal opinion, the secret sauce as to why everyone should consider being a guest or a host or both on podcast shows is the connections and relationships, bridges that can be built, right? As far as, again, something as simple as you guys moving to Nashville, Tennessee. If I wasn't aware that I didn't know that, then I wouldn't be able to introduce you to one person I know there or five people that I know that could lead to you guys parking some capital in there and leading to making an extra six figures a year or tens of that, whatever it is, right? Or just having a good person down there to connect with and shoot the shit with, right? So
yeah,
I love on this as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, what can we do for you, Tyler? How can we make your life
better? Man, that's a good question. I appreciate you asking as well. I would just say sharing the podcast, just having people tune in, listen to the show. And I'm going to go ahead and invite myself on your guys' show as well.
Yeah, let's do that for sure.
I got some wild shit to share.
So yeah. Yeah. Do we do a virtual one if you want? We can just get that scheduled here. I can text you after the show. And also when we move to Nashville, man, my plan is to build out like a ridiculous studio. We got a barn already set up. I'm going to have some like overhang glass windows. So like that'll be done in about 6 months. So we can always do one now. And then if you're ever in Nashville,
it'll be done in 6 months.
I've got aggressive plans.
Let's go. That's what he is. He does. He's like, fuck. Going.
Yeah.
When are you guys moving out?
Well, if everything has to go through, we have an inspection, financing, all those things to still work out. But our closing,
you need to work with the offer. That's right. Yeah, yep. Yeah.
Our closing date would be May 15th if all goes well.
Damn. Okay. Add that to the list of things to do.
I know, right?
I love it. I love it.
Heaven.
Yeah, just plug your guys' stuff in. Obviously, it'll all be below in the description, but how people can connect with you guys. I think just if they're in health and wellness and they're coaches, obviously that's, you know, who you guys are targeting and connecting with and helping grow. But clearly, I think that you guys can show a lot of good value, not even from just business, just from being, yep, you know, parents and just taking calculated risk of moving to a different state and investing. And just the stuff I've seen you guys share online has been intriguing and not just for those that are in health coaching online, you know? So yeah, go ahead and plug you guys' stuff in.
Yeah, thanks. We appreciate that. You wanna give the pitch?
Can you do it? I gotta pee.
I figured you were dying. Yeah. So if you are a health or fitness coach, or if you're looking to be one, you know, you heard us just talk for 2 hours a lot about just the growing space. We can help you there too. So follow along. We're on Instagram. We're on Impact Fitness Coaching Academy is the business page. My personal page, Aaron Diamond Fitness, Diamond without the A. Jordan is just, I think, underscore Jordan Duggar. You'll find him if you find my page. Happy to talk about all the things, you know, business, parenting, relationships, really, really anything is fair game. Slide in our DMs.
Let's go. Boom.